Are you perhaps that mildest form of providence? A parent who has reared your children carefully, teaching them the values you think will guide them best, different for each, in hopes you might thereafter trust them to make their own decisions as they explore your world. This last hands-off image of providence appeals to many, especially to those afraid to face a universe without a father, but unwilling to call themselves unfree. Contemplate it longer, though, and you will find it no more liberating than the others. For such a universal parent would make every one of us a set-set. Providence had its king defend himself. I wish you really were Apollo Mojave, the child sniffled. Apollo would be able to figure out what the bad guys want and make me understand it, and then we could make a plan and get utopians to help. Will you believe me if I claim the predator's breath caught? That his hands shook? Tame humans are easy enough to surprise, but for a creature always on guard, watching his back, as paranoid as nature intended beasts to be, this was the first time in Saladin's life that he had let a person draw so close and only then sensed danger. I told you, reader, man is a beast that hunts by trust. A lion cub may lash out with claws it does not yet know it has, and so may Bridger. That's right, Saladin answered. That's exactly what Apollo Mojave would do. If I just keep running away, all that'll do is make more places I can't come back to. I have to make the bad guy stop, but I can't figure out how to make him stop until I know why they're doing it. What do they want? I don't understand strangers enough to figure out what they want, do you? Me? Saladin shook his head. I don't have much experience with other people. They want me to come meet them, but I don't want to. Who? The attacker? They left a note, an address, but I don't want to go. I'm sure they'll do something awful. I know if I go, maybe they'll tell me what they want, but there has to be another way. Some people are good at figuring out what people really want, even if they won't say. Apollo was. That's what Mycroft always says. That's what I need. This smile Saladin should only have for me. Sorry. I can't turn into Apollo Mojave for you. Do you want to? What? Bridger dug his fingers into the contours of the coat. Do you want to turn into Apollo Mojave? You'd be a lot less scary that way. What now, Providence? You have saved your king. How will you write yourself out of this little predicament? A stick with a rag for costume is a doll, and a human in a costume is one just as much. But if you wanted Apollo on the board, you would not have let me take him in the first place. No. The last thing I want is for Mycroft to have to kill me, too. Come on. Saladin took Bridger by the arm and started back toward the cave. Show me the note, and the body. Human beings I can't read so well, but gore, there I'm fluent. No, Bridger tugged hard. I don't want to go back there. What face would my Saladin have now? Disgust, I think, as when the golden Prince Laurel Mardi passed out in his arms on the steps of our guillotine, and so napped through his final moments, learning nothing. That's the thing about gore, Bridger. If you don't let yourself look at it, then your imagination twists it in your mind and makes it into a kind of nightmare instead of letting you learn from it. You have to look at it. See what they did exactly, blood for blood, or you'll never understand it. No, I want to forget. The boy tried to break free, but Saladin hoisted him and slung him kicking over his shoulder. What did you feel when you saw it? Saladin asked. Did you want revenge? No. You did, didn't you? Just a little bit? You want to forget so you can pretend you're incapable of thoughts like that. Well, all human beings are capable of thoughts like that, kid, and you can act on them too if you want. It's up to you whether you do or not. But if you've had those thoughts, you can't unthink them just by running away. No, I don't want to. I don't want someone with my powers to think like that. Saladin paused, sensing again the danger as birds and hounds stiffen well before the earthquake. What are you, kid?
I don't know. Mycroft says I'm a miracle.
Saladin set Bridger down once more and peered into their open face. You're 13, aren't you?
Yeah.
How long have you known Mycroft?
Years and years, since I was little.
And Mycroft raised you to be this soft? Mycroft Canner could have raised you to feast on corpses if they'd wanted to. Bridger's sobs made Saladin's invisible sleeves rustle, like those almost present tremors in the corner of the eye which make the credulous tell tales of ghosts.
Mycroft says it's important for me to be a kid because only a kid can grow up to be a human being. Of all men, reader, Mycroft Canner does not deserve to have been blessed with so wise and trusting a lover as Saladin.
All right, he answered. There's a logic to that. I'll accept it. I won't make you look, but you have to stay close to me. If this stalker scares Mycroft, I'm not letting you out of arm's reach for an instant. It's not safe. I'll carry you piggyback, and you can keep your eyes closed. Once I see what the stalker's done, I may be able to figure out why they're doing this and how to end it. Sound good?
Bridger's nod was more than half sob.
Mm-hmm. Let's see if the coat likes you. Saladin lifted the hem and draped it over Bridger's arm, which promptly vanished, leaving only grass. The coat says yes.
Saladin fished inside the coat, the griffin cloth wriggling like heat distortion.
Let's see. This thing hooks to that thing and pull this. There.
He slipped his left arm out of the coat and let it fall halfway off.
See? There are some straps there that you can sit in like a little seat, see them? You can climb on my back and sit your butt on this loop and hold on to this strap, and then I can cover you with a coat and no one can see either of us. Alley-oop!
Bridger folded himself into the piggyback seat, a bit too lanky to snuggle.
That's really cool. Yeah, it's for moving injured people. This is the best coat ever when it's feeling cooperative.
At Saladin's command, the back stretched itself enough to cover his wriggling cargo.
Want me to take your bag?
No! Bridger tucked the satchel carefully against his side as the coat fell over him. No, I got it. And you have to promise to never even look in it, okay? It's a really, really secret secret. Mycroft wouldn't want you to see.
A chuckle of thinned patience. All right. If there's anything else you need before we leave here, tell me where it is in your cave. I'll look for it.
Leave?
I wonder what kind of tone Saladin would use trying to be comforting. After I read the gore, I'm going to take you to some friends who have a safe house ready, somewhere far away where I can make sure whoever's after you can't get at you. Once you're safely there, then I'm going to hunt Mycroft down and bring them back to us, no matter what. Sound good?
What kind of friends? Some old criminal friends of mine and Mycroft's.
Saladin stepped carefully, almost tripping over Boo. They'll take very good care of you, because they know if they don't, I'll drag them into an alley, hack chunks off them and eat them while they're still alive.
I like that you're honest. Most people wouldn't say stuff like that in front of a kid.
I like that you like that. You know who Mycroft is and what they did, right?
Yeah. Mycroft doesn't keep secrets from me.
I'm sure they say they don't.
I'm sorry.
What?
Why? I got snot on your shirt.
A gentle, growling laugh. Don't worry about it.
Watch my Saladin now, as he slides soundless through the grass, his wary eyes ranging the walls, the bridge above, as a fish watches for insects it can strike, and gulls who might strike back. Have you ever been in the true wilds, reader? There are some still, the deep, protected Amazon, the Arctic fringes, parts of the great African reservation, not the retrogressive towns where warlords cling to their thrones and borders, but the dark wastes where the full spectrum of wild beasts roams in herds and packs, including that rarest hunter, man. Out there, you are responsible for yourself. No cars, no cops, no restaurants, no good Samaritans. That world does not exist to help you, does not need you, does not care, and will forget you as soon as the brush has grown over your footprints. For scavengers, our cities are such wilds too. For the pigeons who feast or starve by callous chance, for rats, for strays, who have never known the ritual of feeding time. And so, for Saladin. Is this the place? These plastic sheets under the bridge? A shudder prefaced the answer. Yes, please be fast. I can already smell it. Saladin released a slow whistle as he stepped through the tattered doorway. Red spattered the walls, and garlands of red crepe paper twined around the wreckage like toilet paper after a tornado. In the center of the cave, a mannequin lay sprawled on the wreck, in a red child's wrap, with a long curly wig and paper entrails pouring out of a hole cut in her gaping gut. Her face, chest, and arms were striped with painted knife wounds, red trickling from their depths. So the paint blood coated the books and toys beneath, the plastic food and doll clothes carefully stirred to let bright gore coat every one. So that's how you kill an imaginary friend. It's not less bad because they were imaginary, Bridger cried out. They're still dead.
I see that.
Saladin tiptoed through the red and wreck with awe, like an entomologist through jungle, afraid of disturbing the morning's perfect spiderwebs.
It's perfect. Absolutely perfect, every touch.
He leaned close to a twist of plastic entrail and breathed deep, the smell of paint becoming blood salt in his mind.
Who did this, Bridger? I have to find them. You must know something, a name, a description. You said they left a note that you should meet them. Where? When?
I don't know. I destroyed it. You must remember. You can't go. Something horrible will happen.
You're forgetting what I am, kid. If there's another liberated human out there, they're either my disciple or my rival. Either way, this is a challenge.
No. I don't want Mycroft's best friend to get hurt.
I'm going to track them down anyway. It's just up to you whether it's going to be fast and easy or whether I'm going to have to comb through this whole cave for hairs they left behind. Not everyone has our special shampoo.
The child whimpered. Please don't. Let's just hide and be safe.
Saladin took a long breath. Bridger, did you ever see the photos of the Mardi killings?
Some.
Did what this person did to Redder look familiar?
The answer did not want to come. It looked kind of like what Mycroft did to Senator Aeneas Mardi.
Exactly, Saladin confirmed. This is exactly what we did to Aeneas Mardi, cut for cut. It's a recreation.
Bridger, how many imaginary friends do you have?
17? 18? This is a declaration of war. After the stabbing of Aeneas Mardi comes the sound and electricity torture of Laurel, then the guillotine, then feeding Li to the lions, then Chinese water torture on Jie, European water torture on McKenna,
and by this schedule, Geneva Mardi would already have been on the cross a few days. No. No, they already have the others. Aimer and Pointer and No Stand and No Gun. No Gun's been missing for 2 days. They're not imaginary either. They're already real. Then tell me the address. Either one of us turns up there, or your friends die like the Mardi Bash. There are no other options.
Dominic Seneschal, Paris, the alley behind Chateau Darway, XX Boulevard, XXXX, 2000.
It was not Bridger's voice. It was the Major's rising from the coat at Saladin's back, as if from the speakers of Bridger's tracker. Saladin would have liked the flavor of that voice.
Who are you?
Bridger's very short-tempered guardian angel. Can you kill, Seneschal?
If I can't, no one can. I do like hunting hunters.
Don't mess around. Take them from behind. A shot to the back, an ambush, anything that will score an instant certain kill. We can't have that kind of monster around, Bridger.
The hunter's eyes narrowed. I'm a torturer, not an assassin. I don't kill prey until I've given them a proper taste of death's epiphany.
This time you have to. There's too much at stake. Kill Seneschal, and I can find the hostages myself.
I'll kill them, but I'll kill them my own way.
Saladin started to climb the wreckage around the paint-smeared corpse. I don't take orders from angels. Bridger whimpered as he felt Saladin's body tilt.
What are you doing?
Last rites. You don't want to leave your friend like this.
Saladin gathered the paper guts and fed them gently back into the wound.
We can't burn them here, the Major warned. The smoke will draw attention.
I know. But we can do more than nothing.
Laying the body gently on the floor, Saladin scraped a handful of dry earth and sprinkled it over the body, muttering a few words of Greek. Bridger sniffed, trying not to drip again on Saladin's shoulders.
Do you think Redder'll be okay now? Do you think they're off somewhere, okay?
No idea.
Saladin closed the coat around him now, so his passage through the plastic sheeting seemed like nothing but a breath of wind.
If you want to pray for them, try Hermes. Gotta figure Hermes likes imaginary friends.
It isn't easy to make the Major smile. Chapter the 32nd. That There Are Two. This history has two halves, reader. Strange as it is that 7 days should take 2 books to tell, but they were dense days, not just with events, but with inhabitants, many, different, like these wildflowers in the trench where all began. Here, one stray footstep snaps so many different plants, releasing different saps and smells, and stirring up the insects hidden underneath. The surge is just beginning now. The armies of crawling life which swarm forth, as if born from the broken stems. You do not see their full numbers yet, but I hope I have at least shown you enough to realize that these first scouts you do see, like the others that will follow, were not born from the stems. These swarms, these changes, were all waiting in their sleepy tunnels, all with causes that you can now understand. You do not have to believe. You only have to believe that we believe, that I, that Dominic, that Carlyle, who stumbled on so much, believe in Bridger, acted on that belief, and that we believe, too, in the second thing that Providence placed in Carlyle's path on this, the morning of the 27th, in that same fitting spot where, 4 days prior, he first saw divinity reveal itself. Perhaps you will not be satisfied. This last change I'm about to show you is too subtle. You want politics, apocalypse. I will show you that, too, as an addendum. The scissors that can still beat paper. perhaps even our deceptive one-piece house of cards. But if, this morning, Carlyle comes to Bridger's Trench once more, despite Occam's command, it is because Occam, the cars, the humanists, the theft, the earth, are on a different scale. Not on the scale of miracles. Bridger is as much more important to Carlyle, as much more real, as your clothes, your friends, your problems. The floor beneath your feet are more real and more important to you than we and our problems of an age now past. This is the true last chapter of this first half of my history, the last chapter for Carlyle, for me. Here we glimpse the full and concrete shape of the intervention, still shadowed, but a shape in darkness instead of just darkness, a form with edges, definition. So we may say with certainty, I saw something. The intervention of our Maker. The rest is merely what that Maker made.
Bring him out! Bring out Mycroft Cannor! We know you're hiding them, you filthy shit-sack servicers!
Sticks and stones were not to be found in the clean glass tiers of Cielo de Pájaros, but trash flew just as hard, raining down on the heads of the servicers who cowered amid the grass and petals of Bridger's flower trench. Their attackers were on the bridge above, five lamentably sober humanists who had pried open a garbage robot, bearing yesterday's deposit sealed in sterile packets like plump balloons, ready to burst on impact.
Bring the monster out here, or there's a lot worse where this came from.
I must say this first, reader. I am no beggar king. My fellow servicers have never considered me their leader. If some gather around me in the dorms, it is because I am resourceful, and there are certain problems one does not take to the cousins who are our babysitters. Criminals tend to have unfinished business, which often threatens the Boches left behind. Many of these servicers would have moved mountains in the past to save friends and family, but cannot any more. I still can, begging favors from Madame or Mason when I dare and when the need is great. So when my need is great, the others are eager to give back. A shout rallied the servicers below.
Protect the food!
Servicers have few things they can call precious, but a good meal, justly earned, is chief among them. So this picnic laid out on checkered blankets on the grass was as worth fighting for as all the gold in Troy. They formed their makeshift wall, sheltering plates and platters with scraps from the dump, empty boxes, their uniforms, themselves, happy to accept a splatter if it would save a sandwich. The attackers spat.
You're going to lose a lot more than your lunch if you don't send Cannor out. One call's all it'll take to have my whole crew down here. You'll see what damage a rugby team can do.
A leader stepped forth among the servicers, bristling with rage, but nameless here, thanks to Casala's censorship.
Look, we don't know anything about Mycroft Cannor. Don't give us that shit. The cops may be trying to cover it up, but the pictures are all over. Canner's hiding out as a servicer.
What was once chilly struck the servicer's shoulder, spattering rancid juice across her cheeks.
Look, there are a couple hundred thousand servicers worldwide. What makes you think we'd even know if it was true?
The rot rain did not stop.
We're not buying that. Cannor had a whole pack of servicers with them when they came back to finish off that Mardi survivor. You're all in it together.
Carlyle Foster rushed up behind the attackers now, his wrap and long scarf fluttering like silks around a fleeing nymph. Occam may have banned him from the house, but the command of the gravest officer on earth is nothing to Carlyle, weighed against theology. His talk with Briar Casala the afternoon before had done much to revive his spirits, though he would have risen full of strength that day, regardless, for March the 27th, was sacred to Asclepius, Dionysus, Rama, the Bodhisattva Tara, the Egyptian powers Neteret Renenutet and Neter Nepri, and to St. Rupert of Salzburg, a day on which men honored the Creator in many ways in ages past, and still do today. The good cousin charged in, ready to place a restraining hand on the nearest humanist, but their last claim froze him. There's a Mardi survivor? The attackers turned, their anger ready to give way to scorn.
Where have you been, cousin Mars? It happened yesterday. The video's all over. Tully Mardi's the kid's name. Was addressing a crowd when in charges Mycroft Canner with a pack of servicers. Good thing the kid recognized Canner, or who knows what they'd have done.
Not that we'd expect you to care, another added.
This is your fault.
Carlyle drew back.
My fault? You cousins. Don't try to tell me it wasn't Briar Casala who kept the Emperor from putting that monster out of everybody's misery.
Oh, Canner's just a poor, traumatized little orphan, he whined, mocking Casala with a squeaky voice which sounded nothing like her.
We just need to be extra nice to them and they'll turn into a good boy.
Carlyle's smile stayed serene. Actually, Briar Casala doesn't think that, he corrected.
What?
They don't think that. I've talked to Chair Casala personally about Mycroft Canner, and Casala had nothing to do with the decision not to kill them.
You talked to Briar Casala?
Fresh fire lit the mob's eyes.
Then it's true. Casala knew. Do all the cousins know? You've been covering it up, haven't you?
No, no, nobody knows. I know because I'm Mycroft Canner's sensei. See how ably our Carlyle lies?
I'm not their regular sensei, though, he backpedaled quickly, but I get called in sometimes.
Their sensei?
How long have you known?
The hoodlums asked at once.
What's your name, cousin? Who made the decision? Who kept Canner alive?
Was it the Utopians? We saw them save Canner in the video.
How'd they get the Emperor to agree?
They surrounded Carlyle. The trash packs in their hands far less menacing than the hands themselves. Carlyle seemed surprised himself at his answer.
I don't know.
Bullshit, cousin. One of them seized a fistful of Carlyle's hair.
I mean it. I didn't realize it until now, but the whole time Casala was telling me how they didn't make the decision to spare Mycroft Canner, they never told me who actually did. I don't know. I should know.
Don't give us that crap. You know, you're just trying to...
Hey, up there!
The lead servicer called from the trench, cupping garbage-spattered hands into a makeshift megaphone.
I thought you might like to know I called the police. They'll be here in about 1 minute, so I'd run if I were you. If you leave now, we'll tell them a dog knocked the trash bot over. But if you stay, assault on servicers, plus wrecking a public robot, plus harassing that cousin, plus trying to force a sensei to break vows, that's going to be one fat old fine.
Shit, they're right. The skies were suddenly the enemy, as the little mob searched for the falcon streaks of cop cars.
Book it! You got lucky this time, servicer shit sacks. Bring the cousin.
Leave the cousin, they'll track them. Take a picture, we can find them later. The troop stunned Carlyle with a camera flash, then bolted. Watching the troublemakers run, leaving their fingerprints on the robot and their signatures stamped on the pavement by their humanist boots, not a few of the servicers laughed at the amateurs.
Hey, sensei, the servicer leader called up. You'd better be more careful what you say about Mycroft Canner, or you're going to have mobs after you, too.
Carlyle leaned over the bridge's rail, gasping as he saw the servicers clustered barely 10 paces outside the plastic flaps of Bridger's cave.
What are you doing down there? That's a private yard.
Actually, it wasn't, but one tended to forget that the ever-empty public garden of the flower trench did not belong to its young master and his toys.
We're here on a job. Come on down, I'll show you.
Shouldn't I wait here for the police? All below laughed.
The police aren't coming. That was what we in the business call a big fat lie. That makes us both liars, doesn't it?
The servicer leader winked. Everyone knows Mycroft only sees European Doria Pamphili. Isn't that right, Cousin Foster? Carlyle tensed.
You know who I am?
The servicer grinned, like one who's just revealed a good poker hand.
It wasn't hard to guess. It's okay, people. That's the sensei Mycroft said might come. The good one, not the evil one.
Now let's get the picnic cleaned up and see what we've lost.
The other servicers snapped to it, 15 of them, their dappled uniforms making them look like boars around a watering hole as they bunched over their banquet.
Then you do know Mycroft Canner.
Carlyle rushed down the stairway.
The servicer leader met him at the bottom.
Of course. Who else do you think called us here, the Tooth Fairy?
A hat.
That is how one could spot the leader. The only hat among the bunch, a cloth cap, black in this case, round with a small brim in the front and a central button. It is an unofficial uniform, which sprang up somehow as those closest to me began to be regarded with some fraction of the reverence I receive from my peers. I do not have the right to discourage it.
Carlyle started with the obvious, "Where's Mycroft now?"
The servicer captain shrugged.
"Stuck somewhere," is what they said. "But off the streets, safe. I'm supposed to tell you that a kid called Bridger has been moved to a safe house, but they're fine, and have all their important toys with them."
You wonder, reader, how I sent word if I am trapped without my tracker. She will not override Dominic's orders, but no nun can resist a sinner pleading on his knees for her to help him make a single call.
"What are you doing here?" Carlyle asked.
"Mycroft asked us to box this stuff up."
The captain pointed to a pile of crates, which the servicers were loading into a car, like bees filling a comb. "It's an amazing collection."
Carlyle peered into a box, finding 50 plastic action figures packed with care within.
"This cave's all packed, but the other is taking longer." A slop-spattered elbow pointed up trench, where a newly trampled road ran past Bridger's cave another 50 meters along to a second entrance concealed within the walls.
"A second cave?" Carlyle repeated.
"There's a lot more packing left to do if you care to help. Mycroft also said to warn you that the evil sensei Dominic is planning to kidnap and rape you, so you should stick with us to stay safe."
Carlyle chewed on that one for a moment.
"Can you take me to Bridger?"
The captain smiled.
"Sorry, cousin. Safe houses are only safe if you don't leave a trail to them."
"Please, it's important.
No can do. You hungry? There's plenty to go around."
There was indeed. For their efforts had not been in vain. The picnic survived. Burgers and hot dogs, cookies and pies, chips and salads, jelly beans, irregular like pebbles, chocolate truffles round as if hand-rolled, mad layer cakes 4 and 5 tiers tall, and fruits of every color heaped in mounds as if by a miserly monkey. Drinks stood ready, too, bottle upon bottle of the rarest juices and colored sodas, all dutifully labeled, and not a few of them misspelled. The servicer captain laughed as Carlyle gaped.
"Look at that fruit. Almost too beautiful to be real, isn't it?"
Carlyle laughed to himself, a silent, breathy laugh.
"Yes, perfect. The perfect power to feed the servicers."
"What?"
Carlyle waved the what away.
"I thought you were only allowed to accept food for work."
"We are working. Mycroft knows we'd work for them for nothing, but they always leave a spread."
"So, how'd you get lucky enough to have our Mycroft looking after you, too?"
Carlyle took an unhappy breath.
"Do you really all know Mycroft Canner? All the servicers know?"
The captain's eyes, better than most at reading men, grew narrow.
"Off the record?"
"Off the record," Carlyle confirmed.
"If you've met Mycroft, then you know it doesn't take a genius to realize there's something special under there."
"No one knew what at first, but with time we figured it out. There are signs."
"Yes.
Yes, it would have to come out sometime."
"Not every one of us has actually met Mycroft," the servicer captain continued. "Everyone knows, though. It's amazing how many people can keep a secret when they know the whole world will turn into an angry mob if it gets out. You know one died this morning."
"One what?"
"A servicer the mob mistook for Mycroft.
I'm sure there'd have been more deaths, but we've practiced for this, moving in groups, handling crowds. The administration didn't think to plan for our protection if word got out, but Mycroft did. I'm sorry. You will not blame Carlyle for having a one-track mind. Look, I can't explain why, but I really, really need to see Bridger. There's never been anything so important. The captain's smile beamed condescension. Is the world going to end in the next couple hours if you don't? It might. I'm sorry, she answered, but I genuinely don't know where Bridger is. Just that it's a safe house. I'd help you if I could. Look, nobody can trap Mycroft for long. Stick with us and we'll get a visit, or another message, soon, I'll bet. And then you can ask Mycroft to take you to Bridger. Meanwhile, relax and have a... The captain frowned, lifting a green striped ball from the picnic blankets. Do you know what kind of fruit this is? We've been trying to guess at some of them for an hour. The inside has pink and orange blotches and tastes like raspberry, but none of us has ever seen one before. Carlyle stared at the fantasy, which Bridger calls a razzalope. I don't know, it... His eye caught on another servicer passing by with a crate of time-darkened Barbies. Are these boxes all toys? Yeah, the second cave's full of them. Want to see the collection before we box the rest? It's an amazing sight. Snatching a straw burana en route, the captain led Carlyle toward the second cave. Where are you taking it all? Carlyle asked as more crates trudged past. To the safe house? Won't that leave much more of a trail than just taking me? It's going to Sniper's Doll Museum. Carlyle's breath caught. Snipers? Mycroft arranged it. Leave it to Mycroft to know everyone who's anyone. The cousin frowned. I thought they only had sniper dolls at the Sniper Doll Museum. Until now, they did. Apparently, Mycroft convinced Sniper to make a new wing for this. A special exhibit on the pathos of the discarded toy. It should be really something. It was already really something. Even arrayed in the semi-dark of Bridger's second cave, the toys stood in phalanxes, row upon 10 rows upon 100 rows, as a library overstocked with relics crams shelves together to the maximum, hardly leaving room for scrunched shoulders to pass. So Bridger had crammed this cave, 10 times the size of the other, with shelves, and then crammed every shelf with toys. It was a labor of love. Children set out with mommies and daddies, colts with mares, warriors with rivals, villains with heroes ready to stop them if they stirred, all with accessories. Not the ones they came with, but the sorts of things they would want to have on hand if wakened. They were lovingly posed. Teachers at plastic blackboards, families at dinner tables, whole bashes fishing together, making breakfast, dancing, moments in which one would not mind being trapped forever. Those with missing limbs were bandaged and placed in doctor's office playsets, though the mobs of wounded outnumbered the doll-faced nurses like war victims. There were toy soldiers, too, hundreds, who could not set down their plastic arms, but were posed as if in training, shooting targets, ducking obstacle courses, no combat, no casualties. The green team carefully segregated from enemy yellow. Can you picture Bridger, reader, picking these orphans from the garbage one by one? Can you see him scrubbing the century's muck from painted faces and calling each one friend? It was the major who volunteered to teach him that you can't save everyone. Take your time, was how he started. Your powers prove you're fated to be one of the special ones. Maybe someday, God's willing, you'll find a way to bring them all to life and overthrow death's tyranny forever. But not today. Today we're scouts, learning about this world and making plans. You don't bring in the army until you have the tents and grain to house them, too. I've seen this before, Carlyle whispered. The message doesn't have to be a burning bush, reader. From the maker of planets, atoms, and electrons, the message can be a thought.
You have?
The servicer captain scanned the plastic hordes. Not this exactly, but I've had this feeling before. Looking at something just like this, it was recent.
What was it?
Carlyle chewed his thumbnail, struggling, atoms bouncing in their scripted paths.
Where did these come from?
The trash, apparently. There's a trash mine here. They're 20th to 22nd century, mostly, all carefully cleaned up and fixed. It's going to be a really moving display, the idea of this many things that people used to love, abandoned. Carlyle wandered through the shelves, not studying individual objects, but vistas, the long stretch of close-crammed clutter that had been so much more than clutter to someone once. The atom strikes.
Jehovah!
The captain was not close enough to hear. What?
Avignon!
The icons collected at their house.
That's where I've seen this. It's the same.
Discarded things that people used to love, all crowded together by someone who can't stand to see them rot.
An icon collection. A giant no-no box.
Carlyle rushed from row to row, unpacking his thoughts less to his companion than to the toys themselves, or to himself.
Why didn't I see it before? Mycroft wouldn't divide their time between the two of them unless they were equally important.
And Bridger being what Bridger is, the other must also be, not toys necessarily, but like Bridger, they must have...
That's why the Emperor would pick them out of all the children in the world, and that's why Eloise would talk like they're a god.
If people raised at Madame's found something like Bridger, they'd worship it. The servicer rushed to catch Carlyle among the cramped aisles.
Sorry, what?
I can't hear you when you're rushing around like this. Carlyle's eyes came into focus on the servicer at last.
I'm sorry, you're totally the wrong person for me to discuss this with.
A frown of sympathy.
Anything I can do to help?
Short of taking me to Bridger?
No,
Carlyle answered.
I can call a car myself.
Whoa, slow down. The captain caught Carlyle by the shoulder as he started to bolt.
A car? Sorry, I can't let you go.
What? Why not?
I told you. That evil sensei Dominic is after you. I'm under orders to keep you here with us until the threat blows over.
Under orders?
It's just an expression.
The captain claimed, though her dark eyes said different.
You're in real danger.
Whatever you're doing, it can wait.
That's my decision, Carlyle countered, not yours. For the last time, this is serious.
The captain seized Carlyle by the coils of his scarf, dragging him back toward the picnic.
You're being offered food and hospitality by people for whom a little food is a big deal. Now sit down.
Carlyle found himself shoved into a group gathered within the bridge's shadow, where a pair of servicers had stripped the trash-smeared shirts from their backs to dance. It was beautiful. Not one of society's formulaic social dances, but the primitive enjoyment of the body, reaching, kicking, leaping, ducking, close as daredevils, always a hair's breadth from scraping one another's cheeks or sharing sweat. It wasn't until one, thrusting with knife-straight fingers, scored a touch upon the other that Carlyle realized they were sparring. The sensei's voice grew cold.
Servicers aren't allowed to practice combat sports.
The servicer captain stared.
You say that with the public finding out that Mycroft Canner is a servicer? That's reason enough to study self-defense, if we didn't have others.
A long frown.
I should go.
No. Strong hands seized the scarf which looped around Carlyle like a harness.
I said I'm under orders. You're staying here.
Safe.
I have someone indescribably, incomparably important to find.
You're staying here.
Against my will?
Even as kind a soul as Carlyle can become nasty when the friendly face before him is less real than his mission.
I could message the servicer program about your little combat practice, have your paroles revoked.
I will if you keep getting in my way. No, better yet, I know who to message.
Stop! The captain seized Carlyle's arms with practiced speed. But tracker messages are fast as twitching.
What have you done?
Nothing that will hurt you. I just accepted an invitation I was offered to meet someone called Eloise in Paris in an hour. It's an hour from here, so if I don't leave immediately, a lot of important people will start asking why. I will not subject you, gentle reader, to the full breadth of this servicer's knowledge of profanity. Mycroft didn't warn me you were too stupid to live. You do realize I meant kidnap and rape literally, right? We're talking about Dominic Seneschal. I know the kinds of threats that Mycroft makes. I've been to Paris. I know more than you.
The servicer captain frowned. I also know the kinds of threats that Mycroft makes, and I've known Mycroft years longer than you have. This was a real threat.
Hush fell, as the two competed, stare for stare. They both think they know me. They both think they know me so well.
It's on again, a young servicer broke the silence. Channel 1113.
As when a cloud consumes the sun and makes an afternoon's bright colors dim at once, so the servicer captain grew instantly cold.
Last chance, Sensei. I know, Mycroft. I know the threat is real. I want to help you. But I won't let you endanger all the others if this person in Paris really will get us in trouble, if you don't go now. Decide.
What's on again? 1113? That's a tracker channel?
Crap is what's on. Crap only we care about. Now choose, safety or Paris.
It was no choice, reader. Not for a sensei. Not now that the thought had come that there are two.
But Carlyle did make another choice. In the car en route to Paris, those 60 minutes, he tuned his tracker in to channel 1113. It turned out to be a minor news station broadcasting from a square in Ankara, where Tully stood again upon his soapbox.
What do you think caused the great wars of the past? He ranted, this time to a large sliver of the listening world.
Economic instability? We have that. The economic giants, Masons, Mitsubishi, desperate to tear one another down. Was it prejudice? One group hating another? Walk down a street and hear the way angry people use Mason, cousin, utopian, as if they were insults. If we magically plucked a war expert from the past and showed him the present, they'd say in an instant that we're on the verge of war. The only reason our current experts haven't said it is that we don't have any. We believe so blindly that war is impossible that we hardly study it anymore. You think the hives are too friendly, too closely allied, too civilized to make war? The nation-states thought the same thing about each other in 1914, right before the First World War broke out. All it takes is one spark. That time it was the assassination of an emperor's nephew. What will it be this time?
Chapter the 33rd. Martin Guildbreaker's last interlude. The Utopians aren't dirty like the rest of us. Note of Martin Guildbreaker, March 27th, 2454. Caesar, do not read this. Nor you, Domine, not yet. All that I have and all that I am are open before the pair of you, always. But these are the raw notes of something not yet quite transparent. They would hurt you. They would hurt you, Caesar, by making you unable to continue as you have. You could not trust, could not endure, but at the same time you could not act, not on the little that is here. I would not see you so paralyzed. As soon as there are answers enough for your awakened rage to know its foe, I will tell you. Until then, mighty Caesar, I trust you to trust me. As for you, Domine, read not this transcript yet. For you, the price is grief. I would not have you suffer until I can, at least, bring with that suffering the consolation of understanding. 0838 Universal Time, March 27th, 2454. Universal Free Alliance Police Headquarters, Romanova. Commissioner General Hector Carlisle Papadelius.
Well, well, if it isn't Martin Gilbreaker. What brings you to my office at this hour of the night? Or is it not night anymore? 9:30 a.m. Where does the time go?
Gilbreaker. I want an unbiased second opinion.
Papadelius. Don't set those down there. This is my Mycroft Canner desk. You don't want to get your files mixed up in these. Use that desk, my everything else desk. Don't mind the mess. This is about Black Sakura, I assume?
Gildbreaker. I want an unbiased second opinion.
Papadelius. About time. I've been telling you from the start this wasn't a matter to be handled without me. Now, I know better than anyone how tangled polyhive law can get, and I agree sometimes the world is better off when you and your team lubricate these things. But I have 70 years' experience at this, and you have 6. So, when I send you a message that I need to see you about something ASAP, it shouldn't take you 4 days to turn up here.
Gildbreaker. I want an unbiased second opinion.
Papadelius. Quite a mountain of files you've got here. Flight plans, autopsy reports, sensor session schedules, old sniper magazines. What's brewing?
Something big.
Could have told you that 4 days ago.
Gildbreaker. I want an unbiased second opinion.
Papadelius. What's happened?
Gildbreaker. I want an unbiased second opinion.
Papadelius. Understood. Shannon, cancel whatever I have scheduled in the next 5 hours and make sure nobody but nobody comes in here unless the Emperor's on fire.
Gildbreaker. Thank you, Commissioner. I'll lock the door.
Papadelius. I'm going to shuffle these files so I read them in a random order, without influence from how you arranged them.
Gildbreaker. I organized them alphabetically by the 9th word in each document.
Papadelius. Random enough? I'll ask you yes, no, or fact questions from time to time as I read, but no opinion questions. Sound good?
Gildbreaker. Yes. I'm recording this conversation for the record. I'll have it reviewed by an independent party to verify that I didn't suggest any conclusions to you. 8 minutes of reading in silence.
Papadelius. So, one engineer's report says the damage Aki Sugiyama's fiancé's suicide kit did to the car shouldn't have been enough to make it crash, but the other two didn't find anything suspicious.
Gildbreaker. I've ordered another 3 engineers to review the wreck. I expect their reports by the end of today.
Papadelius. The engineer who was suspicious was the same one who said the flight plan was fishy?
Gildbreaker. Yes. There are 162 standard flight paths from the origin to the destination city, of which only 2 guarantee that the car would not hit any habitations if it crashed. It was one of those 2. The likelihood of that is 1.2%, and the passenger could not control which flight path the car took.
Papadelius. This is sketchy. I see the hints, but this is nowhere near enough to make an accusation of complicity. Not in court. Not when we have this call between Aki Sugiyama and O'Bairn, in which O'Bairn explicitly states suicidal intent.
10 minutes of reading in silence.
Papadelius. Esmerald Revere's notes on Cato Weeks Booth classify these episodes into 2 types.
Gildbreaker.
In type A, Cato demands an emergency sensor session and appears in a state of extreme distress. In type B, Cato doesn't see Revere, but puts in 3 times the normal number of hours at the museum that week. And museum colleagues report Cato skipping meals and displaying other signs of agitation.
Papadelius. 27 out of 47 car crashes in the past 5 years were immediately preceded by one of these episodes. That's roughly half of all crashes. Guildbreaker. I'm still working on the preceding 5 years, but I've had to get the crash reports through back channels, since the standard channel is to call Occam Senir. Papadelius. One episode preceded Revere's death and got worse right before the Auberon crash. Guildbreaker. Yes. Papadelius. Before, not after. Guildbreaker. Yes. 2 minutes of reading in silence. Papadelius. This says Cato has 8 to 11 episodes per year, and half of them don't precede car crashes. Guildbreaker. Yes, almost exactly half. Papadelius. But the other half do. Guildbreaker. Very precisely half. 21 minutes of reading in silence. Papadelius. This is sketchy. Guildbreaker. What? Papadelius. The death of Yangtze Decker in a car crash, November 22nd, 2453, resulted in their widow appealing to their brother on the news, which probably ended the Six Lakes hostage crisis. The death of retired Romanov editor Anne Levine Gore's Marmalade in a car crash, August 8, 2452, drastically weakened the Nurturist faction in the European elections. The death of Madden Manila in a car crash, May 15, 2451, made Mycroft Gow drop out of the anti-Mitsubishi land grab movement. The death of Kierkegaard Ranker may have passed the Reservation Welfare Act. The death of Jay Dyko may have saved Roncorp and subsidiaries. The death of Herrera Lee may have erased the Greenpeace Mitsubishi factionalism. But none of this is direct influence. These are all friends, cousins, ex-roommates, sometimes with 4 or 5 degrees of rather sketchy separation from the effect they're supposed to have had. Guildbreaker. Yes. Papadelius. Connections no one would spot unless they were already looking for something suspicious. Just like with Sugiyama's Grand Barkid's fiancée. Guildbreaker. Exactly. Papadelius. How many of these did you find? These politically consequential crashes? Guildbreaker. 34 so far. Roughly 5 per year, or 50% of all car crashes over the last 7 years. Papadelius. 34? Was whoever did this analysis told which crashes were preceded by Cato's episodes? Guildbreaker. No. Papadelius. Yet it seems every single politically influential death was preceded by an episode. Guildbreaker. So it seems. Papadelius. And the crashes which were not preceded by episodes seem to have had no meaningful political consequences. Guildbreaker. So it seems. Papadelius. 35 deaths over 7 years. The rafting accident that killed their bapas was 5 years ago, right? Guildbreaker. Correct. Papadelius. So, this has to have started before that. Guildbreaker. At least 2 years before. 4 minutes of reading in silence. Papadelius. You intend these as control groups? Guildbreaker. Which? Papadelius. Proportion of lethal food poisoning victims whose deaths had a detectable political impact, 2.2%. Proportion of bee sting deaths with a political impact, 2.5%. Proportion of deaths from elevators breaking, 2.3%. Guildbreaker. Yes, control groups. I had my analysts do precisely the same analysis of these groups that they did on the car crash deaths, since it's possible that, with 5 degrees of separation, anyone's death can have a traceable political impact. 2% can, it seems, but 2% is not 50%. Papadelius. No, no, it's not. 18 minutes of reading in silence. Papadelius. Where did you get this data? Guildbreaker. Which? Papadelius. Cato's episode in January did not precede a crash, but preceded the suicide of Tipper Casterman, which pulled Haleakala Banks out of the Nurturist movement. Cato's episode in November preceded the alcohol poisoning death of Carlyle Galli,